What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, it's Dr. Will Cole. This podcast is the manifesto for a new breed of health seekers. This is the art of being well. What's up, and welcome to The Art of Being Well. I am a leading functional medicine expert. I get to consult people around the world via webcam, and I'm a New York Times bestselling author. I wrote Intuitive Fasting, which is my newest book, and The Inflammation Spectrum, and Ketotarian. If you want to learn more about my clinical work, the telehealth center, the books, and there's lots of free resources there for you as well, you can check it all out at drwillcole.com. That's drwillcole.com. And listeners of The Art of Being Well, I'm giving away books of mine, signed books, whatever book you want, just pick one, to lucky winners. I'll be picking randomly. So all you have to do is go on over to Apple Podcasts and rate and review The Art of Being Well. And then you could put your Instagram handle in the review on Apple Podcasts. And you could even message me on Instagram at Dr. Will Cole and say you left a review. Because my friends, the way that people hear this podcast is when you share it. And when you rate and review it, it really helps get the message out there. So thank you so much. And I will be picking randomly some lucky winners. So thank you all. You all are doing amazing. And at the time of recording this, there are millions of downloads so far of The Art of Being Well, and we want to keep it growing to help people around the world. All right, let's get to today's guest. He is a longtime friend of mine. You're going to learn so much from this guy. His name is Aaron Alexander. Aaron is a pioneering manual therapist and movement coach, founder and creator of the Align Method, author of the Align Method book, and host of the Align podcast, which I've been a guest on a few times, which has ranked number one in nutrition on Apple Podcasts. Aaron has worked with some of the world's greatest professional athletes, performers, celebrities, and everyone in between to relieve pain while creating greater strength, greater flexibility, and ease in their mind and body. Just stay tuned because this is chock full of really actionable advice for you all. And stay tuned through the entire conversation because at the end, as always, I answer another one of your burning health questions in an Ask Me Anything. All right. This is Aaron Alexander's Art of Being Well. My friend, where have you been all my life?
It's been too long. It's been all of 2 weeks since we've had our last remote conversation.
Oh boy, we need to have IRL.
I know. Are you coming out here for PaleoFX? I just got an email saying it's happening in April.
Oh man, no, I'm not going to be there. But I love Austin, and I want to make it out there as soon as I can. It's been too long, but I saw you in Orlando not too long ago.
That's true.
Yeah. All right. Let's jump right into it. I want to kind of frame the conversation with just the core of what is the Align Method? How do you work with people? How do you change people's lives and get us aligned?
What is the Align Method? So the Align Method is more of a overarching philosophy on the way that we live our lives and a seamless way to introduce a more movement-rich lifestyle into your daily experience. So as opposed to being something where it's like a workout Taibo, you know, type thing that we do, or like one movement that, you know, is the overlord panacea for all movements. It's more starting to reassess our perception of the way that we exist in our bodies. And that would include the way that we exist in our homes, in our offices, as we're traveling, and acknowledging that the human organism is a highly adaptable organism, and it literally changes its shape, its structure, its neurochemistry, its, you know, its hormones to match the environment that we are, you know, that we're presently in. And so, you know, something that we can start to do to leverage that reality would be to start to, you know, come into your home, for example, and just, you know, take a look around and say, like, what physical shapes does my participation in my home just naturally, organically take me through? You know, and for the most part, if we walk into a home, it's going to be a continuation of that hunched over, you know, hips at 90 degrees, knees at 90 degrees, ankles at 90 degrees, sitting down, eyes contracted, you know, zooming into some screen, or perhaps, you know, some closed walls that are maybe 10 to 15 feet away. So we're continually in this consistent pattern that we've been in, you know, really since like kindergarten. You know, and if you're really honest with yourself, like, how often does the modern human go out of that slightly punched over archetypal sitting in a chair position? It's just car seat to train, automobile, plane, you know, however you get around, to couch, to dinner table, to office, you know, and then your bed's at 90 degrees because, you know, it's not below the height of your hips, and then to your toilet, which is disadvantageous to actually have a healthy defecation because your rectum is in a slight pinch when you're only at that 90 degree angle with the hips. You know, so you're, as you go into a deep squat, it literally elongates the rectum and reduces what's called the anorectal angle, relaxes a muscle called the puborectalis muscle. So they're acting like a sling wrapping around the rectum. You know, so our bodies have these natural innate tuning mechanisms in the form of just really moving more effectively through a broader range of motion. And then that becomes a self-healing mechanism. And a lot of those positions that are so simple and accessible and easy and like, they're right there. They're like, they're with us right now.
Yeah.
We've just divorced ourselves from those motions, you know, and now we're, you know, we're experiencing the consequences of that. So the Align method, the function of it was to create a really like easy to follow guide on how to simply start to reintroduce some of those innate patterns into our daily lives.
Got it. So we are living this kyphotic life, this like hunched over, curled life. Physically, you mentioned like our lives are just, our modern lives are for most of us very kyphotic, very bent over, very slouched over posture. And but also, if I get what you're saying on a deeper level, we're also mentally, emotionally, spiritually kyphotic and sort of bent over and not living this expanded life to the fullest. So let's start with the physical stuff. You mentioned sort of we have to go and talk about squatty potties and the tips and tricks there as far as, but what are the other, like, what's the price that we are paying by living this sort of kyphotic life physically?
Well, so you were already starting to poke at the psychosomatic, you know, the emotional component of our postural patterns, which I just think is so endlessly interesting. And in the Align Method book, I included, you know, there's a whole chapter called Posture and Personality. It just gets into lots of different varied research that opens up that conversation. One of the things in there that we included was a study from San Francisco State University where researchers they had two groups of students. They had one group assume like a hunched over kind of position, that like hyperkyphotic position you're talking about, rolled forward shoulders, forward head posture, kind of like, you know, if you didn't know what was happening in somebody's life and they came in and they're kind of slouched over and that like depressed, the literal meaning of depressed, you know, pulled down position, you'd be like, oh, you probably feel sad, like you had a rough day, like, you know, what's going on? You know, talk about something. The individuals in that position, is actually easier for them to access more like, you know, melancholy memories, And then the people that's mm-hmm. in the other groups, they put them in more upright position. I call it like aligned position, you know, shoulders back, you know, spine long, neutral, expressive position. It's easier for them to access like the good times, you know? And so that our postural patterns are undifferentiated from our internal mental, emotional state, you know. And William James, he's considered the father of modern psychology. He was, you know, getting at this. He wasn't the first one to get at it, but I mean, there's a lot of people throughout history that have been talking about this for a long time. This isn't like a new fangled, like, oh my God, there's a connection between the way we move and the way that we think, the way that we feel.
Yeah.
You know, any person can just, you know, method act themselves into fear for a moment, you know, or anxiety. Ugh. Like if you were taking on a role, how would you do that? It wouldn't be the words that you say. It would be the way that you physically communicate with your body. You know, and where that becomes interesting is, once again, we're these adaptable organisms that change our shape to fit our environmental conditions. If our environment is just naturally molding us into kind of that like depressed physical postural position, I don't know. I mean, draw whatever conclusions you'd like from that, but there's certainly some level of conversation there around, you know, the way that we feel. And then you look at depression being the number one leading cause of disability worldwide, you know, and as we have greater access to healthcare, greater access to biohacking and supplements and nutrients and vaccines and medicines, like we have all of the things, yet statistically speaking, modernity or modern culture is continually, gradually growing towards greater usage of anti-anxiety medications, antidepressant medications, self-harm. It's like, what is going on here? Mm-hmm. And I think all of the conversations are important. They're all spokes to the wheel, but I think there's a really large movement conversation to be had there as well. You know, and I just that postural thing, I think it's an interesting thing just to kind of stew on for yourself. You know?
Yeah. As you're talking, I'm thinking of that. Just the amount of cases that I've seen over the years in functional medicine where it is this bi-directional component where I know what they're going through mentally, emotionally, through their health and the and just sort of that energy from a mental health, brain health standpoint, but also on a physical level where I think that our physical posture and the way we are on a musculoskeletal level impacts our mood and our mental health, like you mentioned that study. But conversely, I think a lot of times people are carrying these mental emotional baggage and weight and trauma, and that's impacting their posture as well. And that's really what you're getting at with your book and your work, isn't it?
It cues how people treat us is a big thing.
Yeah.
And it cues how we treat ourselves. And that was another piece of research that we included in the book was, I think it was from maybe New York State University. I don't remember exactly where this came from. It was a really popular study though. And the researchers and inmates that were in jail for violent crimes, you know, for like muggings and things of the sort. Mm-hmm. And they showed them a variety of different images and videos of people just walking down a street and different sexes and, you know, different races and sizes and all that. And what they found was that the most consistent pattern of the inmates being willing to like, say like, oh, like that would be prey. That would be somebody that I would try to rob. That would be somebody I'd try to mug. Would be the organization of the way that they moved down the street. And the language that they used in this study was if they moved with a greater level of wholeness was the word they used, which, you know, I would say like integration would be kind of the same word. When they moved with this wholeness, like they knew where they were going, they had, you know, balance in the way that they're walking and their stride, they weren't off balance, disorganized, chaotic. Those people aren't easy targets. They're like, okay, like I'm going to let that one go. But then the person that's kind of in disarray, and they're kind of looking that way and that way, and there's no real integration or connection or strength or stability or wholeness in their movement patterning. Literally, the world around them starts to perceive them as someone that, you know, if you're a parasite, that's an organism that I can attach to. And I think that would probably relate to the way that you work with people with parasites as well, I would think. I wonder if there's some connection there of like a sicker organism is probably going to be more open to invite parasites in.
It's just beautiful because I think of parasites aren't beautiful, but this sort of larger concept of it's called the bioterrain is what it's known as, like this sort of ecosystem of the body of which things can be a hospitable environment for pathogens and opportunistic things, whether they they're parasites, bacteria, yeast and fungus, or mycotoxins, mold toxins. It's beautiful. And it's so true. I mean, we're a part of nature, and there's these, we are a microcosm of a whole, but it even goes down to an internal physiological state too, within our microbiomes and our immune systems. One of the top things that I get asked from patients and people on social media, listeners to the podcast, it's about CBD. People want to know, do I recommend CBD? What are the benefits if I do? And then what are some brands that I love? Well, I do think that it has some amazing applications in people's lives. And a company that I love is Ned. These products are science-backed, nature-based solutions that offer an alternative to prescription and over-the-counter drugs. Ned products are chock full of premium CBD and a full spectrum of active cannabinoids, terpenes, flavonoids, and trichomes. Ned's full-spectrum hemp oil nourishes the body's endocannabinoid system to offer functional support for sleep, stress, inflammation, and balance. Ned CBD is cold extracted from the world's purest USDA-certified organic hemp in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. What I love about Ned as well is that they are fully transparent. Ned shares third-party lab reports, who farms their products, and their extraction process, all right there on their site. I also love that Ned CBD products have over 2,000 five-star reviews, and that speaks for itself. People love it. Become the best version of yourself and get 15% off Ned products with code WILLCOLE. Go to helloned.com/WILLCOLE or enter code WILLCOLE at checkout. That's HELLONED.com/WILLCOLE to get 15% off. Thank you, Ned, for sponsoring The Art of Being Well and offering my listeners a natural remedy for some of life's most common health issues. Our next partner has a product I've loved for years, Athletic Greens. So what is the stuff? With one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75, that's right, 75. It's freaking amazing. High quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens. You all know I love my adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, supports your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging, all the things. Athletic Greens is lifestyle friendly. Whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, gluten-free, it contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemicals, no artificial anything. And it costs you less than $3 a day, and you're investing in an all-in-one nutritional insurance. AG1 is a small micro habit with big benefits for you. It's one thing you can do every single day to take great care of yourself. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system and your energy with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's all you have to do. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D. It's also mood supporting. Vitamin D deficiency is ubiquitous. I see it on labs all the time. They're going to give you a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and also 5 free travel packs of Athletic Greens with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/WillCole. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/WillCole to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Get to it.
Have you ever found weird things in a vagina? Have you found yourself needing multiple partners to fulfill your desires? Hey guys, I'm Dr. Jacqueline Walters, a board-certified OBGYN. It is so important that we know how and when to ask the right questions, whether you're in front of your doctor or just hanging out with your good girlfriends. Now, I wanted to create Dr. Jackie's Point of View because sometimes you need to just hear the unfiltered, good old Dr. Jackie. I will inspire, uplift, and educate women and men on the who, what, when, and where of things we balance daily. Make sure you subscribe to Dr. Jackie's Point of View and tune in every Thursday.
You mentioned modernity, right? And then I think of this sort of growing chasm between genetics and epigenetics and how we're living our life and this evolutionary mismatch between what we are adapted to as a human species. So what are the things that we are maladapted to? What is the mismatch between just common everyday practices that we're doing that are really, we don't even know it. We don't even know we're causing problems to our body, but you see so much with clients over the years.
Yeah, there's an interesting book called Muscles and Meridians by a guy called Philip Beach, who he's very well known in like the movement world. And in that book, he refers to the positions that you'd see any hunter-gatherer tribe. There's been a lot of research, particularly around this with Hadza people in northern Tanzania. They spend time getting up and down off of the ground with regularity. You know, and so when they're in there, what Philip Beach referred to these positions, he called them archetypal postures of repose. So repositioning yourself. So it's like a natural tuning mechanism. You're stretching, you know, you're contracting, you're taking your toe hinge and your ankles and your knees and your hips and your pelvic floor and your, you know, all of that connective tissue just naturally, organically goes through its full functional range of motion just through you hanging out. Like, that's a big deal. That's just been some, yeah. That's innate to humanity. Since whatever your belief system is, you know, whether you believe in creationism or evolution or whatever, before chairs, you know, and before being like, you know, the esteemed regal, you know, emperor or empress, or, you know, like the original chairs, from my understanding, I think came from Egypt, you know, and it's an indication of like status, you know, like, cool, like I'm above you. You know, and so the rest of the peasants, like they'd be down on the ground going through those archetypal postures of repose. You know, and so then the people that, you know, the king oftentimes ends up being burdened with disease because they start to pull themselves out and then they have access to all the sugars and, you know, all the foods and probably less sunlight because someone else is going out and gathering all the goods and bringing it to them in their hole. You know, and it's a really interesting thing how that works. You know, it's like the disease of affluence or affluenza, I think. Chris Ryan calls it in his Civilized to Death book. You know, and so that would be a really simple, easy thing. Like right now, as we're having this conversation, you could see it when I got up, I got all the way up off of the ground. I'm set up so that I'm on the ground. You know, I've got a comfortable rug here. I got some floor cushions. I have this like low coffee table that I have everything set up on. I have the microphone attached to the coffee table. I have the tables sitting in front of a window so I can allow my eyes to look out the window and, you know, the ciliary muscles and all the contractile tissue that changes the shape of your lens can go through that full functional range of motion as well. And that's all tied into your autonomic state. When you're in a contracted visual state, that's going to send the stimulus to your autonomic nervous system that, okay, we're focused in fight, flight, sympathetic, like get her done. Maybe there's a predator there. You know, we got to sort this out. When you relax, you draw out into that panoramic vision, it's sending an indication. It's like, okay, let's just take it all in. Let's regather. Let's repose. You know, we're going to start to reassess, you know, and repair. You know, and so all these systems are mutually integrated systems. You know, so there, you know, I started off talking about spending time on the ground. That was the main thing. But then that seamlessly transitions into the way that we use our eyes. That seamlessly transitions to the way that we use our breath. And you can be naturally moved by your environment where you do take yourself through a full visual range of motion. You do take yourself through a full, you know, physical, musculoskeletal range of motion. And you do take yourself through a full respiratory range of motion. But for the, and so the respiratory part, I know I'm bouncing to a bunch of different places, but I think it's all consistent. That respiratory part is another toggle that you can pull on to change your autonomic state. So if you are method acting yourself again into being surprised, being afraid, panicking, anything of the sort, what is your, if you're a good actor, how do you breathe? You, if you're surprised, you go, big gasp in. If you're really stressed, you go, what is that? Everybody listening? You can hear it, will literally, because we are so good at communication, we're always attuning to each other. That would literally just stress a person out just hearing it.
Yeah. You made everyone flinch right there.
That's right. It's true. And that's what makes humans so cool, man. Like that's how we communicate. And it's how we communicate to ourselves. So you can start to pull on these levers, physiological, musculoskeletal levers that we all have access to, and to change your state and also change, you know, your imprint in the world, the way that people perceive you. And if you understand mm-hmm. how to leverage those levers, then you're ahead of the game. Like that, like mm-hmm. we don't get that education growing up, which is just outstandingly unbelievable. We're learning about all this information, but there's not a lot of like embodiment in Western cultural education, which is just like very interesting.
Very true. And for a culture that's so obsessed with the body, meaning the physicality of it all and the materialism and all, and it's such a paradox that for such a superficial culture, embodiment is just not even a thing. People don't even probably even know what we're talking about when we mention that. So what do you mean by that? Because that's a profound statement.
I would reference, have you heard of the Feldenkrais method?
Yes.
Feldenkrais? Yes.
Yeah. Micro movements. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Or Alexander technique, Frederick Alexander. He's another good reference for this. Ida Rolf, another good. Andrew Still, founder of osteopathy. All these are really great, amazing, like conical resources for these conversations. William James, you're going back before any of that. But Moshe Feldenkrais referred to a thing called our self-image. You know, and so our self-image, for the most part, the way he described it in his book here, actually, Awareness Through Movement. The way he described it was when we're raised, we have a kind of a balance of our self-education and then this external education. And for the most part, you know, a small child is pretty much exclusively self-educated. You know, they're going through those developmental patterns, they're reaching out, and it's pretty much life is just about, you know, putting things in their mouth and reaching out and grabbing and reaching out mm-hmm. to grab to put things in our mouth. You know, so that and with that, it's just they're just naturally organically being self-directed. And then this external education starts to come in and starts to teach the child how to be from an external lens as opposed to an internal expression. And for most of us, a lot of us, myself, like I have these patterns like all over myself. Like I can notice it. We're kind of performing in a way, you know, and we're looking for some type of external validation or cue, like, oh, you did a good job. You know, you're raising a child based on their achievements as opposed to just like their beingness, like, or their effort, or like, wow, like you really tried hard. You know, instead it's like, cool, you got the trophy. Amazing. You know, and so a lot of us, we have these external kind of movement patterns of like learning how we think we should be. You're performing art. So you walk into the room, it's like, okay, like, how do I stand? You know, what kind of clothes do I choose? Like, what do I do with my hands? And then
it's important.
You gotta know, you know? You ever see that Seinfeld episode where Jerry Seinfeld is talking about when you're naked, get like a little belt with pockets on it because he doesn't know what to do with his hands when he's naked. That's good. Yeah, anyway, but so we have this extra model of like how we think we're supposed to be in order to ultimately be like accepted by the world around us. And then underneath that, you know, kind of the ironic part of it, people really love people that are naturally themselves.
True.
But it's like, what am I? What is myself? Like we all have that inner wisdom, inner whisper, inner movement that we tap into intermittently, typically when we forget about who we are. And those are the best times. Mm-hmm. Those are the times that you're like, wow, man, you weren't thinking about any performative stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so the more that we can, and that's why things like breath work are so darn popular. That's why you know, cold plunging is so darn popular. That's why, you know, doing like really hard things, you know, with a group of people and kind of transcending that place of who I think I am, you know, all mm-hmm. that story, self-image stuff. On the other side of that comes this other place where you kind of, you know, you're just moved by the experience. Mm-hmm. So the more that we can, I know that was a very fluffy kind of metaphysical way of describing, but it's kind of like it's a fuzzy subject, you know, what is like that innate self?
Right. It's far reaching and it's obscure, but the reality is, I think you said it beautifully in the sense of we need to get out of our heads and what other people think and what societal constructs and the noise and the chatter that culture sort of breeds, but get out of our heads and our bodies and rooted in our bodies. And you know what you teach with through physical movements and breath work and these other tools really are all rooters in the body. They are all grounders.
They're anchors. Yeah, it's like anchor points back to yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And you think about it, like on a mental, emotional, spiritual level, so much of people, so much of us, so much of our world and culture are in that sympathetic fight or flight stress state. What these anchors do are really just recalibrating and supporting the parasympathetic, the resting, the digesting, the hormone balance state that we're just so off balance with the two. And both are important, but we've just been serving one way more than the other, right?
It's like, you know, this is going to venture into like more philosophical, metaphysical woods, but it's kind of like the idea of you don't need to push the river, you know? So I think we've kind of been sold the idea that we need to push our biology. We need to push the river. You know, it's like, and the solution to what ails you is out there, you know, and there's some person, some priest or some shaman or some doctor or some boyfriend or some girlfriend that has the solutions,
right? Some amount of money, some status,
exactly,
some attention,
power, some car that has the solution to this internal angst, you know. And I think that like most people that, you know, there's like the phenomenon of astronauts arriving to the moon and then coming back and being deeply depressed, you know, or an Olympian winning the gold and coming back and being like, oh, I don't know. Who am I? What am I? I had this carrot. I consumed the carrot. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah. Orange colored poop. That's it.
You know? Yeah. Carrots are very good for your eyes. You know, health
it's good
stuff.
For beta carotene and fiber. Nothing wrong with carrots. And nothing wrong with all the material things, but I think it's overvaluation.
Great. It's
the overvaluation. It's never the thing. The thing is never going to...
It's why you're doing it. It's never about the thing. It's why are you doing the thing? And so if you can come to a place where you're, you know, Ram Dass has a quote. He says, who you think you are is invulnerable. And no, who you think you are is vulnerable and who you are is invulnerable.
Hmm.
So that part of you, like that deep part, that part where you're just out with your friends and you're just like not a care in the world. And, you know, you just feel connected to something bigger than yourself. Like that is you. And so the more that we can start to kind of stoke, you know, like blow on that ember from there, then you can play with anything, you know, all the other games, like get involved, have fun, like play them beautifully. But if we get lost in the game and lost in the belief that the solution to our problems or that internal sensation of, you know, whatever, is out there, I think that it's, you know, we just keep pushing the carrot forward.
Right. And you're going to have a life full of discontentment and anxiety and dread with when you start looking outside of yourself for fulfillment ultimately.
You know what? You know what's great about getting to do things like both of us do, like doing the podcast, getting to go to, I don't know, events and rubbing elbows with people and whatnot, is getting to connect with the people that kind of like the globe collectively has deemed to be problemless. You know, like, wow, if I was just that person, I would be happy.
right.
And then you connect with those people, like, so the celebrity or the, you know, the person that's got lots of followers or lots of money or whatever it is. I've never encountered someone in that position that really had more or less problems than anybody. I mean, oftentimes it's actually more. I'm not saying it's always the case, but oftentimes there's more stress, more burden, more people trying to come at you. It's just like, you know, and so to have that opportunity to realize like, nope, like that's not it. You know, it's something else is very
true.
Nice. And I think one of the only ways to do that is to actually arrive at that carrot or at least be around people that have consumed the carrot. And then you're like, okay, interesting.
Yeah. That's well said. Well said. And then that real work and what the line method, what you really teach is making yourself the carrot, realizing that you are everything that you need and you can be the source of your own joy, or and it's within, not something external.
And the external informs the internal.
Yeah.
You know, so as the below, as above, so below.
Yeah.
So it's not like I exist inside this vacuum in between my ears. And, you know, in order to get things right, I just go in between my ears and sort it out. It's the friend groups that I spend time with, the environments that I place my body into. If you are in nature more often, you will become more natural, right? Yeah. If you're around people that have some calling towards some greater good beyond their own individualistic gains, you know, that's kind of the vibe of the people that you're around. You collectively raise each other up.
Yes.
Every time you're around that person, you're like, wow, man, that was like cleansing. Like, I feel good.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. There's a phrase in Aramaic, actually. It's ituruta de la tata, ituruta de la ela, which is kind of what you just said. It's like this awakening above and this awakening below, where it's like, it's bidirectional. Like the more I work on my energy, the more it's going to work, draw good things to us. But then conversely, I see people that through their healing journey, they need to cut some of the things that are fueling the sympathetic, fueling the fight or flight stress state. Because you're right, the circle that you surround yourself with is medicine just as much as the next food, and just as much as that carrot.
and the way that you make yourself a matching resonance to those people, places, things, whatever, that you think it would be great and, you know, supportive and developmental for you to be around, is to work on yourself in private. So you get so good that you're undeniable, is something that I heard from somebody else. And I'm like, bam, like mic drop. Yep. Like, be so good that you're undeniable.
Yeah.
And that's doing the things.
Yeah.
That's choosing to do the hard thing with regularity, embracing the discomfort, saying like, no, I'm actually, the thing that's hard is the thing that I look for.
Yeah.
And if you can place yourself into that, like before this conversation, not that I'm, you know, putting myself on any pedestal of like, I do the hard thing, but a really simple example would be, there's a cold pool that I jumped into. It wasn't a big deal. You know, I'm not bragging, but that I didn't want to do it. You know, so that was a thing. I did not want to do it. I knew the other side of that, I'd be a better version of myself. I chose to do it. That habit is a muscle that you can ingrain, and you can habituate yourself to making that decision with more regularity.
Yeah.
That quality is highly attractive. The people that we want to spend time with because we think that they're all the things, admire that quality. It's probably what got them to that point to make you want to hang out with them.
Mm-hmm.
So you work on yourself to expand your potential, you know, friend circle or community or any of that. But if you're just waiting for the community to stoke your fire, good luck, because then you're the parasite. If you're the person like, man, I want someone else to give me energy. It's like, no. Build your energy up enough to match-ish them in a different way and challenge them. Then there's a game. Now you're entangled and you can keep going. But you need to stoke yourself out. And the way that you do that, I think, is, you know, all the stuff that you teach, really.
Well, yeah. And what you're teaching too. I think all of these are tools to elevate your quality of life. And so much of it is really shifting the body into more of that parasympathetic state. While in the short term, like a lot of those hormetic stress state, like you mentioned, cold and stretching and high intensity interval training, all this stuff, so it can be short term sympathetic, but it actually helps the body be more parasympathetic in the long run. Apple cider vinegar has so many health benefits. It supports tons of different things throughout the body, but you want to make sure you're getting it in the right way. The way that I get my apple cider vinegar and the way that I recommend my patients to is to get the apple cider vinegar complex from my friends at Paleo Valley. I've loved this for years. I love Paleo Valley in general. They're freaking amazing. But their apple cider vinegar complex is really smart because You get all the benefits of apple cider vinegar, like supporting digestion, breaking down proteins or amino acids for better absorption. Remember, we aren't just what we eat, we are what we absorb. And improving the blood sugar response, supporting with satiety and craving. So if you're hangry or have blood sugar problems, this is a great supportive tool. The main ingredient, acetic acid, supports in extracting nutrients from our food for use by our body. And they combine apple cider vinegar, I really love this, with other healing spices like turmeric, ginger, cinnamon, and lemon for added benefits for digestion. So yeah, you just take this every day, you get a safe form of it. Because look, if you're taking apple cider vinegar straight up, you can burn your esophagus, it's too harsh on the body. So harness the amazing benefits in a safe and effective way. So all you have to do is head on over to paleovalley.com/Dr. Will for 15% off your first order. Again, that's paleovalley.com/drwill. paleovalley.com/Dr. Will to get that 15% off. Thank me later. Typical children's vitamins are basically candy in disguise. I mean, we all know this, right? I mean, intuitively, this is kind of an obvious, right? Filled with at least 2 teaspoons of sugar, unhealthy chemicals sometimes, and other gummy junk, growing kids honestly shouldn't be eating, especially getting it in a multivitamin. That's why Hiya was created, the pediatrician-approved, super-powered, chewable vitamin. While most children's vitamins are filled with lots of grams of sugar and can contribute to a variety of health issues, Hiya is made with zero sugar and zero gummy junk, yet it tastes really great and is perfect for picky eaters. I have 2 picky eaters at home, relative picky eaters, not to put my kids on blast, but they love Hiya. They take it every day, no problem. They freaking love it. Hiya fills in the most common gaps in modern children's diets to provide the full body nourishment our kids need with the yummy taste they love. Formulated with the help of nutritional experts, Hiya is pressed with a blend of 12 organic fruits and veggies, then supercharged with 15 essential vitamins and minerals, including vitamin D, B12, C, zinc, folate, and many others. Hiya is designed for kids of all ages and sent straight to your door so parents have one less thing to worry about. We've worked out a special deal with Hiya for their best-selling children's vitamin. Receive 50% off your first order. To claim this deal, you must go to hiyahealth.com/Will Cole. This deal is not available on their regular website, so you have to go to hiyahealth.com/Will Cole, hiyahealth.com/Will Cole, and get your kids the full body nourishment they need to grow into healthy adults. Before we shift to the last section of the podcast, I can't not talk about something you mentioned earlier, because so many gut health nerds out there, and you mentioned pooping properly. So what does, whether it's orange colored poop or not, what's the deal? Like, how do we get the best poops of our life?
Well, one, the obvious thing would be just raise your knees up above the height of your hips. If you're pooping and your knees are below that, it's a more disadvantageous position for your poop chute, your rectum, to elongate, to allow a healthy defecation. So as you squat, you're opening up the poop chute. Suddenly you don't have to push. If you're pushing, there's a good chance you're going to get hemorrhoids and have like all the backup issues. When you take a poo, it should be like a 7-second experience. Like, you get it down, you're like, cool, good times. You know, if you got a newspaper, you know, and you're checking all your Instagram notifications, and it's like 14 minutes later, you come back and it was like you ran a triathlon, like that was your poopy experience. Like, you need to reassess.
That is amazing. That's very well said. So what, I mean, I know that there's things you could buy online, the squatty potty, and like, do you recommend any of those?
I don't care. Whatever. It doesn't matter. I mean, you could if you're super absolutely, you know, astonishing, ridiculous, you could literally just squat on your toilet seat. But anything that raises your hips up, I've done that many, many times. I got in a habit where I was doing it all the time, but now
you've upgraded. You got the squatty potty.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, get something that doesn't look too ridiculous. You know, I think there's like nice wood ones that you can get.
Bamboo, but yeah, squatty potties.
Yeah, whatever. I think that's a really simple, effective solution. That's another, coming back to align method stuff, that's an example of you becoming the shape of your environment. Yeah. So, you know, another example would be, so something else I have in my bathroom doorway is a pull-up bar. And so when I walk through there, there's the, technically it's in my doorway into a closet. But so as I walk in the closet, there's the invitation to reach my arms up over my head and have a little spinal shoulder decompression. Mm-hmm. As you're going through that range of motion, there's a whole book by a guy called Dr. John Kirsch. He was an orthopedic surgeon that he implemented this hanging protocol, which I break down in the hanging chapter in the Align Method book. It's chapter 7, and breaks down this really simple, effective protocol. It's approximately 90 seconds total of hanging each day, broken down into whatever interval you want. So it could be 15 seconds, six times, or whatever you're into, and a couple other, you know, strengthening exercises. And it literally changes the shape and structure of your shoulder girdle. When you're continually in this, shoulders are in this medially rotated, turned in, elevated, like shoulders up towards the ears, protracted, shoulders forward. When you're in that position, it starts to impede your shoulders' range of motion. It's overhead range of motion.
Yeah.
So a simple solution for that, like, it's such a no-brainer. Most of the things that are really like high leverage impact vehicles towards health, it's like they're simple, they're accessible, they're darn close to free. You know, there's absolutely some circumstances for some percentage of the population. It's like, no, you need some real detailed stuff, and we need a little science, and we need a little pharmacy, and we need to, like, we got to do some work here. For the rest of people,
yeah,
it's pretty darn close to free outside of like getting organic food.
Yeah.
And that's an example of the pull-up bar. Like, as you just do a little decompressive hang while you're doing that, you can relax your eyes. That's chapter 16 in the book, I think. It's all about vision and how it, you know, informs our autonomic state. You know, let your eyes kind of space out, take in the whole room. Maybe put a pull-up bar near a window. It'd be great. You know, doesn't matter either way. Just, you know, relax your eyes. Yeah. Maybe you could emphasize a long exhalation. So get on the pull-up bar, hang. That's it. Suddenly, like, even me just doing that, and I assume, unless, you know, there's probably some percentage of people that find me annoying. That's just, you know, the nature of things. But for the people that are like, you know, are not in that state, just that moment of, just hearing it will calm us down. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, okay, what if I added 4 times a day a little dose of that?
Yeah.
What would that do to my physiology?
Yeah.
You know, and the answer is, it would, you know, it would make you more calm, and it would make you longer, you know, longer from a, you know, in the sense of like, it'll elongate your spine. It would open up your shoulder girdle. It'll take you out of that defensive postural position. It will make you more athletic. If you cannot get your arms up overhead into full functional flexion, range of motion up overhead, then every time you do try to do that, you're going to borrow from your lumbar spine. You're going to put yourself into hyperlordosis. You're going to put excessive stress on those intervertebral discs. You're going to be losing any potential power output that you could get. Because when your ribs are flaring, as you lack range of motion in the shoulder, that's going to send the signal to your nervous system that you're not stable to produce power. So your body does not want you to explode, so it will downregulate your access to power. So if you potentiate full functional range of motion of all of the joints, then you can maintain that strong, stable, stacked, you know, aligned position throughout the entire body through a wide variety of ranges of motion and positions and sports and experiences, so that your body always trusts you.
Yeah.
Like, that's a very, like, that, just that in and of itself, it's like, I think if we could just start thinking about that, you know, that'd change the world.
Absolutely. <You know? laughs> Well, it's that back full circle. It's being embodied. It's being in alignment with your body, and that all those things you mentioned are just a cascade of healing, parasympathetic, rest, repair mechanisms that many people, like you said, it's free or close to free, most of the things that you teach, which is so powerful, and showing the science around it. If I could pivot real fast before we go, as you know, the podcast is called The Art of Being Well. I want to pick your brain. I mean, this whole podcast has been Aaron Alexander's Art of Being Well, but we're going to ask a little few things, and whatever comes to mind, I want to learn more about your wellness world in that brilliant mind of yours. So first question, you're stuck on a desert island, but you would survive. I mean, you need to be on Survivor because you would survive quite, you would win.
you
would
kind.
Win. You have one food and one food only, nutrient density, survival. What's that food for you?
An animal.
What type of animal are we talking about?
I don't know. Whatever.
Not picky.
A lamb maybe. I just eat nose to tail.
Okay. There you
Fish,
go, people.
Whatever. Just eat nose to tail.
So organ meats, what's your favorite way to get organ meats?
I like blends of, and I'm not like dogmatic carnivore guy, like at all. I'm very challenging of almost all of the nutritional dogmas. But if that was your question,
yeah,
I'm going to die if my answer is celery. I'm going to live fine if I eat nose to tail. Do I want to live that way all the time that you come to my house and it smells, you know,
No.
I love guacamole. You know, I like a lot of things.
No, but you answered my question very accurately. Nutrient density, purely on that, not taste.
Yeah, exactly. And so the way that my preference is to get like those mixed kind of like burger type packages where they have heart and liver and like a mixture of the animal.
Yeah. Like US Wellness Meats has some of those like pre-mixed.
Yeah. The only like hill that I'm really willing to die on with nutrition is the sourcing of food matters.
True.
So regenerative farmed animal, really, you know, whatever, cow, lamb, like whatever it was, but from a regenerative farm would be my vote.
Got
with
it.
That.
Next question, let's go there. The complete other side of the spectrum, purely on taste alone and remove the health benefits aside. It may or may not be healthy, but just purely on deliciousness, what's that one food for you?
Man, probably sushi. Like sushi a lot. All the sauces, all the things. The sauces probably have canola oil and all the terrible things. But yeah, big fan of sushi. Also like guacamole, per mentioned. Big fan of guacamole.
I love it. Next question. This is a great question for you actually, because you've done it. You've done so much in this space, but what's the weirdest wellness thing that you've done that you're willing to admit on a podcast? And you're probably down to admit anything, but what would you say is the weirdest out there, most out there thing you've done in wellness?
Coffee enema specifically by myself, like curled up, you know, on my bathroom tile floor. This was like 14 years ago. And I was just like, I was like imagining if, you know, there's some Truman Show experience where there's like cameras looking down at me and I'm like laying sideways, like with a tube up my ass, like pumping coffee into my anus. I'm like, good God, what have I become?
How far have I fallen? Oh my gosh. All right. Next question. You mentioned so many books. And by the way, we'll put the links to all the books that Aaron mentioned in the show notes so people can check it out. But what's a book that you've read in the last year? It doesn't have to be health or wellness or anything we talked about. It could be fiction. What's the latest book or a book that you've read in the last year that's really got you thinking in a fresh new way?
A book I'm reading right now. I like the Awareness Through Movement. I really like going into the minds of some of the people that a lot of the stuff that I have done with clients over the years and just working with myself, like the origins of those. So for me right now, I'm digging into the mind of Moshe Feldenkrais. So Awareness Through Movement.
Love it.
It's not easy to read though. Honestly, I wouldn't recommend it for a lot of people, but if you're like really like nerdy into this stuff, it's not very sciencey, but it's pretty esoteric. But that for me would be that.
Got it. All right. Last question. You've traveled all over the world, done really cool things. What's the best restaurant what's your favorite restaurant and what do you eat when you're there?
Interesting. Favorite restaurant. I don't know. I don't think I have a favorite restaurant, honestly. Any kind of like finger food. It's like I like eating in Morocco. I like going to Ethiopian restaurants. You know, having like the little, I'm a big fan of community and like communalness, as long as it's with people that I want to be communal with. I'm not like just complete free love guy. Like I'm very select with who I want to be fingering food with. But assuming I'm with a group of people that I do want to connect with in a deeper way, then yeah, for sure. Any kind of like finger food, which I say like Ethiopian food, not necessarily for the flavor, but just more, I like one pot, the same thing in Morocco. I got one pot, they have like the tagine, you know, mm-hmm. and you got your little bread things and you reach and you all grab from this communal pot. Yeah. I think that's a really cool thing.
Have you ever been, and a shout out to this restaurant in Long Beach. I think they have another location in somewhere else in LA, but in Belmont Shores in Long Beach, Open Sesame. Next time you're in LA, and maybe we'll be in LA together at some point, that's exactly what you're saying. The sort of communal finger food togetherness.
Delicious, it's so great.
Clean, yeah. Lebanese food. So yeah. My friend, this has been a great conversation. How can people get plugged into all your work? How can they get the book and all the things?
Well, people are listening to this. I always listen to podcasts. So I host a podcast called The Align Podcast and have conversations a lot like this with people vastly smarter than myself, such as Dr. Cole, who's been on there. And the book is called The Align Method. And that can be found, you know, anywhere. Ideally, walk to your bookstore would be great. If not, you know, Amazon, obviously like the place. You know, Instagram, Align Podcast. Everything's Align Podcast. You just type Align Podcast in the internet, you'll find it. YouTube is the thing I'm the most enamored by and excited by right now. It's just such a fun, amazing experience to get to train and, you know, do hard things, learn from people that are masterful at their craft and get to document the experience. I'm taking myself through some ridiculous scenarios on the YouTube. Also at Align Podcast. Yeah.
Love that. Yeah. This is great. And I just, as you're talking, I'm thinking, man, how did two Pennsylvania boys get to do what we do? We're pretty blessed, man.
I reflect on it all the time. I'm very surprised and impressed and grateful and have moments of, but it's also, you know, it's definitely choices, and it's definitely, I think it's about finding the right people around you and not taking too much credit. Anything that I'm able to do, including writing a book, the book is like a tribe of really amazing, diligent people that are just way like combining my, you know, surfer bro bra self with like real publishers in New York City that get stuff done, you know, and there's deadlines and we like, and then the editors and then the experts and then, you know, just there's so much, and the artists that made the cover and then the photographers, and then it's like, it's so much. You know, it's mm-hmm. such a community thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing with what you do. Like you have a probably really amazing support team of people that you probably express your gratitude for with regularity. And you probably have like a meaningful relationship with a lot of those people. Cause I would imagine knowing you, you acknowledge how invaluable they are to you mm-hmm. being able to live your life the way that you do.
100%. They're my family. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
The people I get to work with are like family to me, and they have my family, but my team is a family. And it's, I agree with you. It's the same thing with the book, brilliant people, all this stuff. It takes, it's synergy of people doing awesome things.
Yeah.
My friend, love you. Appreciate you. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah. Thank you all for tuning in as well. I appreciate it. That's funny. That's why I say at the end of my podcast, thank you for tuning in. I feel like I'm hijacking.
Yeah. You need, this is the tables have turned, Aaron. Okay, you can't be in control here. All right.
Thank you, man.
At the end of every episode, I'll be answering a question from one of you guys. Nothing is off limits. Ask me anything. And you can send your questions over to me on Instagram or Facebook. As a functional medicine practitioner, it's been fun seeing the questions that have already come in on different food philosophies, wellness trends, and ways to approach overall mental, emotional, and physical health and well-being. Thanks for those. And I'm looking forward to seeing what else is on your mind. Now it's time for another Ask Me Anything. Today's question is from Kara. Kara asks, I hear so many different opinions on eggs. Are they healthy or not? I hear you. There's so much conflicting information online about not just eggs, but pretty much anything. It's what I lovingly call Dr. Google. And we could substantiate our own agenda at a click of a button or our worst fears or whatever we want, right? So let's cut through the confusion, the Dr. Google confusion. And we love Google, but there's no shame on Google. But let's kind of just set the record straight from at least my perspective and a functional medicine perspective, at least most of us within the space. What's the deal with eggs? I think framing eggs first and foremost, as with most foods, it just put it, see it through the lens of bioindividuality. And that's the heart of functional medicine. We're all different, and even healthy whole foods, what works for one person may not be the best thing that you should be having all the time. And I think that really sums up my thoughts on eggs. I think eggs are one of nature's multivitamins as far as nutrient density. It's a wonderful food to consider on just the surface when you look at nutrient density, and we'll talk about those. But there's some caveats to that. Typically, when someone's asking this question, they are either asking it from a food sensitivity or like an immunoreactivity side of things, or they're asking it from like the age-old cholesterol, saturated fat, heart health side of things. So I don't know what this question really wanted to know about, but let's talk about the convoluted cholesterol factor here. Because yes, egg yolks and eggs as a whole have cholesterol. So what does the research say? Actually, there's a recent study out of Peking University in China. The study is called Association of Egg Consumption, Metabolic Markers, and Risk of Cardiovascular Diseases. So if you're interested in looking this up on PubMed. But basically what the researchers were looking at, they found that individuals who ate a moderate amount of eggs had higher levels of protein in their blood called apolipoprotein A1, which is this building block of high density lipoprotein, or HDL, aka what is generally known as good cholesterol. These individuals, especially the people that ate eggs, had more large HDL molecules in their blood, which help clear excess cholesterol from the blood vessels and thereby protecting against blockages that can lead to heart attacks and strokes. The researchers further identified 14 metabolites that are linked to heart disease. They found that participants who ate fewer eggs had lower levels of beneficial metabolites and higher levels of harmful ones in their blood compared to those who ate eggs more regularly. So this is just one study, a recent study that looked and said, hey, people that ate eggs generally had these protective, these cardioprotective metabolites in their body that protect them against heart problems, heart attack and stroke. So there's one. Let's look at nutrient density here, because egg yolks are a really nutrient-dense form. I mentioned it's one of nature's multivitamin. It's filled with choline, which is a precursor to acetylcholine. So it's really important for your brain health to get these healthy nutrients in your diet. Has other B vitamins to support methylation, which we need for detox and healthy hormones and lowering inflammation levels. Has lots of other nutrients that honestly most Westerners are not getting enough of in their diet. So you may be surprised. I mean, many people are surprised to hear me say that the egg yolk is really where it's at, because Americans love their egg whites, right? They love their egg white omelets and they think they're doing the right thing by that. And I would say, no, actually you're missing out the most nutrient dense part of the egg. Yes, it does have cholesterol, but we're seeing in studies that most people, when they're eating just average amounts of eggs, they're completely fine. Now, there are caveats to that. There are people that eat copious amount of high saturated fat or high cholesterol foods like APOA3/4, APOA4/4 specifically. These are the way your body transports saturated fats. And this isn't just about eggs. This is about any food that's higher in saturated fat and cholesterol. That could impact levels negatively, but that's typically when they have high insulin, high glucose, they have metabolic syndrome, plus they're eating basically lots of sugar and lots of saturated fats. I could see some problems there. I don't think it's eggs' fault. I think it's a combination of all these unhealthy variables where it may not be right for that person to have copious amounts of these foods. And my job would be to get the insulin down, get the inflammation down, get their gut healthier so their metabolism and their microbiome could have these whole foods within reason. Another thing to think about is, are egg whites being problematic amongst a lot of my patients, at least while we're healing their guts? So albumin, which is the egg white protein, which again, people love their egg whites, that is or could be problematic for some people. So people that have leaky gut syndrome, people that have autoimmunity, I see it pretty often. People that have some sort of inflammatory reaction to egg whites. It can create skin problems as well for people that have persistent acne breakouts. I've seen it be problematic too. The people that are somewhere on that autoimmune inflammation spectrum, it's something to consider. Is it the egg white's fault? Not necessarily. I want to improve the integrity of the gut lining and calm that hypervigilant immune system over time so they can reintroduce the eggs. So yes, we should look at eggs through the lens of bioindividuality, and really just it's boiled down to context matters. Of course, I would only recommend organic pasture-raised eggs, because what the chickens are fed matters. And if they're eating a lot of junk, it's not necessarily the best thing that I want my patients to be having all the time, every day for breakfast. So definitely get the best type of egg that you have access to, because the quality of the egg, just like with anything else, when you're looking at dairy or you're looking at meat, the way the animal is raised and the way they were getting these food sources matters. So hopefully that wasn't me talking too much about eggs. I can geek out forever and ever about this stuff. But yeah, those are my thoughts on eggs. Thanks again for listening to The Art of Being Well. If you have a chance, please rate and review the podcast here. And if you like what you're hearing, hit follow and pass it along to a friend. To see more, head to drwillcole.com/podcast. I'll be back again next Thursday, and I hope you will too. Talk soon.